This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Hope everybody around the world is doing fantastic. This is a show where we interview baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. Believe it or not, we just got done with Curaçao Baseball Week with the International Sports Group, and we are now in beautiful Aruba at the Barcello Resort. It's an all-inclusive resort. We're getting ready this evening for the coaches seminar, coaches clinic with all the coaches from Aruba. This is going to be exciting. We got some great people here, great coaches. And currently with me is one of the top pitching guys, throwing guys in the world, a teacher, an educator, a professional. He understands the science behind throwing and how to develop and so forth. So we're going to be talking to Ron Wolfert with the Texas Baseball Ranch. And if you know Ron, probably everybody around the world knows him. He's spoken at conventions around the world. He's spoken at the ABCA. He's spoken in front of at the Medical Institute. So different conventions with experts there. And he's just done a fabulous job. He's worked with Major League players, Major League teams, collegiate teams. I mean, he's just done so much. He's got over 360 guys throwing over 90 miles an hour, but he will tell you velocity is not the only thing. We'll discuss that. So first of all, I just want to thank Ron for being on the show and welcome to Baseball Outside the Box.
Well, it's great to be here with you in paradise. And if we just look out this window right here where we're doing this in the hotel lobby, the water is turquoise for everybody that's just listening. It doesn't get any better than this.
Yeah, don't tell them too much because now they're going to get jealous. They're going to think Baseball Outside the Box is making a whole lot of money, and we don't have any sponsors yet, so we're working on that part.
Okay, well, it is beautiful.
Well, Ron, listen, I know we're getting ready also for a coaching seminar this afternoon. Before we get into the pitching or throwing, let me ask you this question. Coaches, give us what you believe is why they're so important for the foundation of this game.
Well, the key thing to development is practice. And before you can have a high caliber practice, what we call purposeful practice or deliberate practice, using the term from Anders Ericsson, it is best that will occur with a leader that can guide you and direct your activities. And there's so often, we say everyone needs a coach. Everyone, even the highest level performers, have their own coach. And the reason you do that is because when you're in the midst of it, you need to have somebody kind of always guiding you, looking at your direction, because we can all get off track. We can all do things that we think are effective and they're not. We can all end up kind of just going through the motions. Those are just common flaws we all have. So we all know that if we think back on our growing up, we all had a favorite teacher or two. I'm sure you did. I do. And we can remember those people clearly. And if we ask them, why are they your favorite teacher? You would say, well, there's two qualities to it. One, first, they really believed that we could be something special. And second, they held us accountable to that, to whatever we were doing. They really held us into account of our process. And that's what makes teachers so valuable in this world, and certainly in the game of baseball, and specifically learning how to throw, pitch, or play baseball.
What do you do for yourself to kind of check yourself, and also what do you do to make yourself better all the time?
Well, that's a great question. I have many mentors I have a marketing mentor, I have a business mentor, and then for the baseball side, you surround yourself. I try to surround myself with people that in each area are just simply smarter than I in this area. And as my wife will joke, that's not so hard to find. but for example, functional movement, alignments, that sort of thing, I surround myself with two physical therapists that I consider very close personal friends. and they guide me in this realm. As far as injury recovery, I spend a lot of time around orthopedic surgeons. I have six of them that I consider friends, and several of them are very high profile. And I will continually ask them questions to say, okay, for several years ago, I said, well, this is putting a strain on the posterior cuff. And I had one of them say, no, Ron, you're saying that wrong. That what you're talking about is a superior labrum. And so just having somebody clarify some of the things that you don't know what you don't know, and being around people that are really very, very versed and very steeped in a specific arena or a specific area of expertise, that can really help you. So what I try to do is surround myself with people that in each specific area are brighter than I am, whether that's strength conditioning, I really look up, for example, Eric Cressy and Lee Fiocchi are two phenomenal strength coaches that whenever something comes in regards to strength development, I go to them and say, okay, here's what I'm looking at. Am I right on this or am I slightly off? And invariably they'll say, well, you're slightly off, and then they correct me. And that's so valuable. And I would really encourage everyone to create their own dream team so that you have people, whether that's peer review. Why do you think in academia they have peer review? That keeps you from getting off track and continually holds you account in for what you say, think, write, and give to the general public.
You know what? You just brought up a good point, because I'm going to throw something at you we're not even going to talk throwing yet. Throw something at you. You know, I always thought that, you know, as a coach, if I'm going to run a practice, I'd like to have somebody there watch me run the practice, evaluate how I'm doing it. But you don't see a whole lot of that.
No, because I think sometimes one of my best students, and I won't use his name so I won't get him in trouble, is assistant director of player development at a major league organization. And I always I joke with him that they need to, you and I talked about this off off mic not too long ago. I said, you need to take the word development out of that, because you're really not developing much. It's more like talent evaluation, not player development. And he laughed at it. But I think sometimes that we just take for granted, we take practice for granted. And we think, hey, if I just get my reps in, quote unquote, around the word reps or repetition, then we'll just get better. And if that was the case, then all older drivers would be better. Yeah. Everybody that just does something for more times is better. And that's not, as you know, that's not always the case. Sometimes more is just more. I just can't wake up in the morning and go downstairs and bang on the keys of a piano every day and then think I'm going to become a good piano player. Even with all that work at banging the keys, I've got to do it a certain, there's a process that I have to follow. And how I'm going to improve on that is really be very precise, very purposeful, and very deliberate with that practice. And I think sometimes we don't honor practice as nearly as well as we should.
You know, and I've got a couple coaches that I know of mine that, you know, they've been in the game 35 years, yet they might come on an international trip with me and they'll say, hey, P, would you sit in the stands, evaluate the game situation, and later we'll talk about it. You know, that takes a lot, because, you know, you're talking about constructive criticism, but nobody wants to hear, well, you should have done this, you should have. But actually, they should be hearing that, whether it's running a practice or whether it's, you know, managing a game. It doesn't hurt to have another eye there to help you, because that's the way you're going to get better.
Well, absolutely. And if you can keep your ego in check, what I found for the most part, if you can keep your ego in check, if you're not really concerned about who gets credit for what, it's amazing what can be accomplished. And if you think about anything that we've ever done in life, anything, And that is for all of us, and that's for any arena. At the very beginning, we were not very good at it. And by the end, hopefully, we become pretty good. There was a saying that anything worth doing well is worth doing poorly at first. And I will say that again. Anything that's worth doing well is worth doing poorly at first. So then, if you're just open enough and you trust their critique of somebody else, you should invite critique and invite feedback. And then really that's all that is. Some people take critique personally, and I know sometimes it can be leveled as such. But for the most part, if you're wise enough and you can keep your ego in check, a lot of people can give you some feedback that can help you evolve and change what you're doing, adapt and grow in your current capabilities.
Folks, we are in the beautiful island of Aruba. We are here with the Aruban Baseball Federation, the International Sports Group, handling another coaching clinic. We've got over 14 around the world. We're doing another one here in Aruba. We just finished one in Curacao. We are with Ron Wilford with the Texas Baseball Ranch. Ron, I always ask guys that are especially experts that have really, you know, and I say experts, that have really studied, you know, the throwing and the pitching. You know, this is the most obvious question, I think, that everybody asks all the time, because you hear it on television a lot. You know, there's a lot of injuries going on, whether it's young kids or whether it's older guys. Are there a lot of injuries? If there are, what do you believe might be the cause behind it? And maybe some type of solution.
Well, we're living in what I would call the perfect storm, and here's what I mean. There's a conflux of contributors that are happening all at once, and one is year-round baseball. We're playing baseball year-round, so there is no there are less and less multi-sports athletes, and so people are pitching for longer in games, for longer periods of the year. That's one thing. Young men are also trying to light up a radar gun, and although that is what I do, I am a performance enhancement guy, and obviously we want to improve velo, but a lot of times people just they believe that velo creation is a simple linear thing, and it is not. There's a lot of different things that take place in there, and so while you're throwing it harder, you're now at actually greater risk of getting injured because there's so much more energy going through the system. So if you're not as strong as you need to be in certain places, if you're not as flexible as you need to be in certain places, and if you're not as mechanically sound, or if your movement pattern is not as sound, you can put extra stress on soft tissue. And the fourth thing is that young men their state of functional strength isn't the same. They're not coming from the farms. They're not climbing trees and riding bikes. What they're doing, I see a lot of kids with really good thumbs, right? They're playing video games. Their recess is out of our elementary schools. And so they're not the same functionally strong people that we used to see from the, you know, Bob Fellers coming off the Iowa farm and throwing. And so this is the perfect storm. All these things are happening at once. There is a confluence that is really creating an accelerated injury rate. And so if we're going to really, to go to your final question, how can we reduce it? Yep. We need to take each one of those and see if we can minimize the effects of that and really be careful, wise, and adapt a process that will minimize those contributors from flaring up at the wrong time.
You know, we had breakfast this morning. I really enjoyed talking about this area, and I was really glad to hear what you said about this. You mentioned velocity, but you also mentioned that control is equally important. Explain that to our audience around the world, because I know out there, especially on networks, it's everything about velocity, 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 and sometimes we tend to forget the other.
Well, there's three basic components of what we call performance in pitching, and that one is velocity, and the other one is command, and the third one is whether you want to call it deception stuff, secondary offerings, whatever. That's the spin. You're creating spin or different movement, and so it's hard to say which one is more important at which time. If we become all sold out, completely sold out to velocity, there's a lot of times we don't take care of what we should. In the terms of the other two. And then I see people that just dominate. They say control is everything. So, they say the old mantra, from businesses, location is everything. Location, location, location. You can go too far in that, and therefore you start to limit the athleticism of your pitcher. And then other, you can get spin crazy. You become try to trick them too much. And so you need to really create a balance of those confluences, because really what pitching is about health and durability, being able to recover, being able to have velocity that is above your competitive peer group, having command above your competitive peer group, and having secondary stuff above your competitive peer group. And the question you should ask as a parent or a coach is, okay, where is this young man as far as pain is concerned? How is he as far as recovery is concerned? How is he as far as velocity? How is he as far as command? And how is he as far as secondary stuff? And then from there, you customize a path going forward. There's some people that need to just worry about their pain. Get that solved before you start worrying about all the other things. And then there's sometimes you need to work. Your velo is ahead of your peer group. And instead of going working on your command, you just keep working on your velo. And that's going to, pretty soon, you're going to have to throw the ball over the white thing before you can. So you need to ask yourself the question, right now, what is constraining me? What is limiting me on my progression and going to the next level? And that may change over the years. You might have a minor league guy at first, velo is constraining him. Then maybe 2 years later, it's command, fastball command that's constraining him. And then maybe 2 years later, it is developing a third pitch or having sharper later break on his breaking ball. So he goes from a curveball to a slider. That may be constraining him, or go the other way around. So really what we're looking for is the whole, it's got to be a holistic picture, and it's not just about velocity.
All right, we are with Ron Wolfert. Listen, if you need to get a hold of him, thetexasbaseballranch.com. Go to the website. He's got some great stuff on there. Some of it's free also, so check it out. If you need to get a hold of him, if you haven't been to the ranch, check that out. Talk to people that have been there. Everybody that goes there talks about it and says it's a great program, and they've really improved a lot, and you can take a lot of that stuff back home to continue to work on it. Okay, now, you mentioned the word pain. Now, talk to our audience, you know, because we may have parents, could have coaches, and even myself. Talk to us about, you know, when a young kid's got pain, the difference between pain, soreness, where they have the pain, what should they do, what does it mean, and all that.
Well, first of all, I'm glad you're asking this question. It's probably the most important question that I get asked. And number one is, when we're talking about pain, we're talking about any way. We just use the term pain, and the term pain scares a lot of people, just the word, right? Sure. So they'll use word games like, no, I don't have pain, I have tenderness.
Yeah.
I don't have pain, I have soreness. I don't have pain, I have, as a matter of fact, we had a young guy the other day tell one of my assistant coaches, my arm is feeling pretty sketchy today. I don't know what that means. So the deal is, pain is this, that you have a degree of pain that inhibits a natural throwing, meaning you can't throw as hard as you would like, you can't throw as long as you would like, you can't throw as often as you like. That's when pain becomes an inhibitor to performance. And so you have to go back and look at what are the contributors to this pain. And we found that there's six of them. There is asymmetries, strength imbalances. They're mechanical inefficiencies. There's preparation related. They don't warm up or they don't cool down very well. There's workload related. They're throwing too often or too much for too long a period of time. And then there is natural or innate systemic, and that is sleep, hydration. They don't get good recovery. And then there's one that is preparation related, meaning that training related. What does it look like? What's your weightlifting program? Could your bench press actually be causing or contributing to anterior shoulder pain? And that's really true. So you need to look at all that as a very holistic way, and try to eliminate those contributors or minimize or mitigate those contributing factors to pain. And I will tell you, for everybody that's listening, Especially the moms are getting this, by the way. The moms get, if the mom is on this, she's shaking her head. The dad's like, okay, Payne,
throw through it.
I mean, that's what it is. And I will tell the dads, there has never been a time ever in the history of the ranch, since I've been doing this for 20 years, that if I have reduced, sincerely and genuinely, reduced someone's arm pain, that they haven't, in 6 weeks later, thrown harder. Because once that pain is gone, the body goes, okay, now I'm going to allow you to move me faster. Now I'm going to allow you to push the envelope. But as long as I have pain, there's a little governor in there, and it's going to keep me. So this is, so if you're a dad that's all about velo, you start with the pain. We have a saying at the ranch, we start with the pain. And that's why, because if we can't get that solved, one, it's going to inhibit your natural throwing. Two, you're never going to feel like pushing the envelope. And three, you're never going to recover well enough to be able to throw as often enough on a regular basis to really make the strides and gains you need to make. So it's bad. Pain is bad on multiple different levels.
Now, is there a point where, and what might be that point for our coaches out there and parents and young coaches, that the pain is so much that you need to go see an orthopedic and not continue to throw?
Well, that's a really good question. Now, I know there's at least some coaches and some dads are going, all right, thanks, Ron. Now you made my young man too afraid of pain, right? And so what's the difference between simple soreness, regular soreness, and pain? Here's your answer. Whenever you have enough of a discomfort that you have to change, you have to either stop, you have to throw less with less intensity, or you have to wait longer for recovery, this now becomes an issue. And I don't think, Pete, I think we do a disservice when we think it's either a yes or a no. Pain, that's the reason we have our people do a pain audit from 0 to 10. 1 meaning that the pain is really, really, really small and low, and 10 meaning it's excruciating. And so what we're going to see you do is there's going to come a time, I don't know, usually it's about, for each individual, it's different. You may rate your pain a 3. You may have a lower pain threshold than I do, and you rate it a 3, and I rate the same pain a 5. But here's the thing. When I continually rate, and now I say my pain's a 7, and you say your pain's a 5, even though it's in which direction it goes, and when I feel... If you ask every player, okay, what number pain, as Justin Verlander, for example, is one of my clients, and Justin Verlander, we started out with this. Okay, of course he's a warrior, and of course he's going to throw through a lot of discomfort, right? He's at 6 months. Your arm is never going to really feel 100%. You're in the playoffs, guys. You're in the World Series. You can't just go, you know what, my arm doesn't feel 100%. So... here's what we do is we scale it 0 to 10. And then I said, okay, at what point you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at what point does it clearly you go, you know what, after this number, it's going to start to affect my performance?
All right. Now, bringing that up, I know you and I have talked a while about this in the morning, and I really liked it. But actually, before I do that, folks, don't forget, go to our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Check it out. A lot of videos, a lot of tips on there, a lot of things that we say on the podcast we put on the social media. Check out our Twitter at Baseball Out. We're all over social media. It just helps us get the word out about the Baseball Outside the Box podcast. We need your help. We've been getting a lot of great reviews, Ed, and what we need is your help getting it out on social media so more coaches and players and parents in the game hear about the podcast. Now, Ron, one area that I see a lot with, now I'm going to go to a little bit to the grassroots level, because what they do a lot of times is they'll go to the field and they'll just start playing catch.
Right.
And that's it. Then play the game. Explain why that may not be a very good thing for young kids.
Well, let me tell the dads that are listening, what would happen if I woke you up at 3 a.m. and I said, I have Usain Bolt out there in the driveway, and I'm going to have you race Usain Bolt for $100 or $5,000, you're going to get a 50-yard head start, and you're going to get a race Usain Bolt, but you're going to go in 5 minutes. And so the deal is, every dad that's listening would go, ooh, man, I would probably pull a hamstring, right? And I would say, but you know why? The number one reason is you're not completely warm. You can't recruit what isn't awake, mm-hmm. right? So what you have to do, there's a process in which you can literally start to go. If the ramp up is too steep from dead still or at rest till full effort, the steeper that ramp up, the more stress that puts on the soft tissue. Your soft tissue still has blood going through that, and although it's not like a muscle, you have got to warm up soft tissue, and it's got to be far more gradual than a lot of people realize. Now, here's the other mitigating factor. When you're 8 years old, if you remember back in the day, you could warm up, you could be at full speed really quickly. Your soft sure. tissue goes, let's go, yeah. right? By the time you and my age now, it's like, I'll be ready by Tuesday,
right?
right? So it just takes you a longer time to warm up. Now, so that's true, but even with young people, there should be a ramp up. The more steep the ramp up, the more at risk we get. And so we really need to have a process that will take guys and start to open up, especially like ankle mobility, hip mobility, T-spine mobility, really start opening up the joints, getting ready to do that, and then warming up the musculature, getting a core temperature up 1 degree, otherwise, you know, break a sweat. And then we have a much better chance of performing at not only a higher level, but a safer level, because we're literally what now is our soft tissue is ready for the demands that are going to be asked upon it.
Now, in a real world, when we're talking about, because I'm going to get to the area of pitch counts a little bit, because that's another discussion out there. The National Federation, you know, mandated pitch counts for high schools. And I get it. You know, there's some coaches that are just overly competitive sometimes and throwing a kid too much, especially in the cold weather areas, throwing too many pitches, you know, in the first week. But, you know, I got to believe, just using common sense, that a lot of the injuries occur when they start real young. Now, in a real world or in a perfect world, if every coach understood how to handle pitchers and when to take them out and whatever the situation may be to have, you know, warning signs and all that, that'd be perfect. But we're not in a perfect world. So, unfortunately, with the young kids, we've got pitch counts now. Give us your opinion of pitch counts, why they're good, maybe why they're not good, whatever.
I'm not a fan of pitch counts, and not because I don't think people are abused or overused. It's just that I don't think pitch counts really give you a very good indication. Let me give you a point in case. I'm going to give you two kids sitting right in front of me, two mythical kids right in front of me right now, Pete. One through 60 pitches and the other through 115. Mm-hmm. So I ask you which one had a higher workload. And if that's all the information you know, you're going to go, well, of course, Ron, duh, it's 115. But what if I give you some more information? The kid that threw 60, that was over an inning and a third. The one that threw 115, that was over 8 innings. Okay, so now which one had a heavier workload? And it's the first one,
yeah.
The one that threw 60. So, but let's say our pitch count, if pitch count becomes our God, then or our standard for everything, he's under 75 pitches or under 80 pitches or whatever we're saying. So he's safe. He's not safe. Right, we it's a false choice. 60 pitches an inning and a third is, quite frankly, that's dangerous, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if you think about it, 115 pitches over 8 innings, that's about 12 to 14 pitches an inning, and that's what I call being on schedule. So what I would say to everybody listening, pitch count per inning is way more important than pitch count per outing, and so there's the thing. And so what I'm afraid of is that we believe that we lean on pitch counts as really our guide when it's only one small piece of the entire puzzle. And I think sometimes it can actually be, it can trick us, or it's not nearly nearly as advantageous as we think. It's still going to require common sense from the coaches.
I would think also velocity, how hard the kid throws, might be a factor. And also, not to think about it, but I know I heard the guys talking about it on during the World Series, the type of game that they're pitching, the intensity behind their throws.
There's a multiple ways. Like, for example, does your son, does this young man have injury of past history, past history of injury? What does his workload look like the previous outing, the previous week, the previous month, the previous year? What's the weather like? Is it colder? Is it warmer? Was the last time that he pitched, was it under duress? Meaning, was it high intensity innings? Is this and then what did it look like last year? Is he throwing now 20% more pitches than he's ever thrown before in a season? What does his mechanical efficiency look like? Is he really a disconnected guy that puts a lot of stress on soft tissue, right? What is his pain audit? So when you just say pitch count, I just look at that and I go, I get it. I get why they're trying to do it, but I have no faith that is going to make any demonstrable difference on arm health and durability. I think it's going to be a red herring. I don't think because the causes of injury are so diverse and so multitudinous that just affecting one small sliver of those six contributors, I don't think it's going to. Matter of fact, I would. It's not going to have the desired effect that they would like to. Now, I'll have somebody go argue with me and go, well, if you don't control that, then the injuries are going to get even worse, right? Nolan Ryan threw 244 pitches in a game in 1972. 244 in a game. Now, that sounds insane. But Nolan Ryan, that was in July. And so he had there's many factors to that. One, it was over 16 innings. So if you do the math, that's about 15 pitches per inning. So he stayed on schedule. Second of all, he had no arm issues. So the mitigating factors. So I'm not saying that now 244 should be now everybody should do it. It's pitch count is an individual measure, not a universal measure.
You know what? That's well put, because I got to believe the pitch count. I always thought the pitch counts are a Band-Aid for the solution. Really, what we need is education of our coaches to understand everything you just talked about. If they understood that, then they can make the proper decisions and when taking kids out or whatever they need to do. Now, when we get to pitch counts, or not pitch counts, when we get to pitching in general, let's talk about when they're done pitching, a little bit about the recovery phase and what they should be doing there.
Well, that's really important because, now, I'm gonna step back if you don't mind.
Sure.
I think one of the worst things that is happening in youth baseball right now, and it's been happening for a while, is this. Not even so much the year-round thing, which is bad enough, but here's what I'm saying. They will use pitch count to say almost an excuse. Let me give you an example. Let's say that an organization, whether it's USSSA or any of these youth organizations, they'll say, if you throw over X amount of pitches one day, then it requires so much rest, mm-hmm. whatever. So here's what they'll do. They will go close to the max, pull you back, and then immediately the next day throw you out there again. Actually, and no, where is it ever in the history of Major League Baseball someone will throw 60 pitches on a Wednesday and actually come back and pitch on a Thursday? It just won't happen, right? So, and that's with full-grown men with supposedly great movement patterns or mechanical efficiency, supposedly. But yet we would do to a 12-year-old with an inefficient movement pattern and underdeveloped growth plates what we wouldn't do with a grown man that's a professional. So I think the thing that we got to get away from, one of the best things we could ever do is if you throw 24 pitches, you have to wait. It's pitch per a number of hours, but a number of pitches equals a number of hours before you can pitch again. So if I throw 24 pitches,
24 hours.
I got 24 hours. 48, 2 days. 72, 3 days. 96, 4 days. Yeah. Now, that would save people. But unfortunately, as you know, the flaw in most select baseball and youth baseball, travel baseball, is that they try to keep rosters small so parents are happy because their kiddo is playing. Their pitching staffs are too small, and they end up having to extend their pitchers to get through the tournament, especially if they're going to go through the championship game, and they got to, you know. And so what actually happens is guys run out of pitching. And these big tournaments make money by having a lot of people in it. So there's too many teams in there because the money thing doesn't work really well. You need to have a lot of teams. Sure. So there's it once again is a perfect storm. You got small roster sizes with not enough pitchers playing in tournaments that are extended, and now kids are now pitching on days rest that they need. They're pitching depleted, and that really is far more serious than just pitching a little bit over your pitch count in one day. If you would have 3 days to rest or 4 days to rest or 5 days to rest, you may be able to go 115, 120 pitches if you stayed on schedule with no deleterious effects. On the other hand, you throw 24 pitches, you need to have 24 hours off, totally gone before you pitch again.
Great point. And if you think about it, you look at the high school programs. I know three or four high school programs just in Chicago, one particular one that throws multiple pitchers. They develop more pitchers on their staff. You know, they throw multiple pitchers in a game. They might throw three, four pitchers in a game. You know, it keeps kids involved, keeps them throwing. You've seen a little bit in the playoffs. You've seen a little bit in the playoffs also. Now more pitchers are pitching in a particular game. So our youth associate organizations, they should be encouraging teams to develop more pitchers on their staff, no?
There should be, not only should we have larger. I think if I was starting a youth organization right now, I would make it mandatory that you had at least 16 players on the team, and at least three quarters of them are capable of pitching, because that's what you're going to need when you have these extended tournaments that go, you know, into Sunday night to get the winner. They run out of pitching. And there's where you get into danger, is this guy's coming back on short rest. But the dynamic is, you know, these parents pay money to have their kid on a select team, and they want him playing. And so it's a dynamic that's really kind of set against itself right now. And we've got to educate and let people get over that. And I think we need to have larger staffs on pitching, and I'm not sure everybody's going to be a great pitcher. I don't care, but are you able to pitch and burn up innings, eat up innings for your team? And that keeps everybody healthy, but because once the workload gets on too many and your bounce back time is too short. So there's two things about keeping guys healthy. Try to keep the ramp up nice and slow, nice and gradual. And the second is don't throw back-to-back days or back-to-back-to-back days without the appropriate number of rest, hours of rest.
Fantastic. And, you know, before we get to recovery, we had a great conversation this morning. You were talking about, you know, baseball is a traditional sport, and we see that a lot where, you know, coaches teach how they were taught, and a lot of guys don't make a lot of changes. And you hear the word mechanics a lot. I heard it in the past. You still hear it now. You know, that you saw your eyes lit up when I said mechanics. And you call them movement patterns. Explain right. That a little bit, and then we'll get into the recovery part.
Well, Paul Nyman coined a phrase probably around 2003. He coined a phrase from Nikolai Bernstein, and Nikolai Bernstein is really the modern-day father of biomechanics, and he's a Soviet. And Nyman coined the phrase, the body will organize itself based on the ultimate goal of the activity. And what that means is that your body is going to, everybody's body is different, and it's going to organize itself differently to throw a baseball. So when we talk about mechanics in the traditional sense, we make the assumption, a lot of parents do, a lot of coaches do, that there is one ideal way of throwing a baseball. And then as soon as we say that, if I said to you, Pete, close your eyes and picture Randy Johnson. Can you picture him? Yes. Then picture Pedro Martinez. Then picture Roger Clemens. Then picture Nolan Ryan. Then picture Warren Spahn, now Sandy Koufax. Are any of those guys the same? And you would go, no. Nope. And yet, so I hate the term mechanics because it implies there's a one ideal way of throwing. You, Pete, may have your ideal way of throwing, but it will not be the same as mine because you and I are different. And so when we call it movement patterns, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to create more synergistic, more synchronized movement patterns that are mechanically sound and put our body in more advantageous mechanical positions. Not necessarily that we're trying to cookie cut or clone somebody into a specific way of throwing.
So that could depend on the body size, the strength, and all those.
Absolutely. That and many more, right? And so even, and if you, you have a brother, right? Mm-hmm. Did your brother throw exactly like you did? And the answer is no. And why is that? You came from the same gene pool, so you're not building exactly the same. So what we do is we make a mistake, in my opinion, trying to create a one-size-fits-all program for anybody, and we should realize that one size not only doesn't fit everybody, one size won't even fit one forever, because, you know, when you were a young college guy, you probably your shirt size probably was a medium. Now your shirt size is a little bit larger than a medium. Because you're changing, you're evolving. Major league guys, or even minor league guys or college guys or high school guys, they're not the same from one year to the next. So even an ideal plan that works for you today will not work for you tomorrow because you're a different guy, you're a different cat, you have a different body, you have different constraints, different limitations, different strengths, you're different.
I've heard you talk on this before, and I think it's important for our coaches to understand this. Anytime you get a player that comes to you or a group of players, the first thing you do is you evaluate, you analyze them before you begin anything. Explain that to our audience, one, what you do, but two, why coaches need to be doing this before they start working with a young man.
Well, I'll give you a great analogy. When you go to the doctor's office, what happens? You walk in the doctor. And let's say you have a cold. Let's say you're there, you have a sore throat, and you're afraid that you're going to have bronchitis or you're going to have strep throat or whatever. So you walk in the doctor's office. What happens? The doctor says, "Pete, why are you here?" And you say, "Well, doctor, I've got a sore throat." You don't walk in the doctor's office, and the doctor comes in and goes, "Hey, Pete, how you doing? Hey, it's been a while since I've seen you again. I got some really good stuff for toe fungus."
Yeah.
you're like, no, you don't understand. I'm here for a sore throat. And he goes, no, yeah, I know that. But you ought to see this toe fungus stuff. Okay, and the difference is, now maybe in 5 years you come back and you have a toe fungus and you want that stuff. But right now what you need is you need to get your sore throat made. Or you need to maybe think about you're having chest pain. Or you have a sinus. Or you have an ear infection. Or you have a urinary infection. All those things are different. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to find out what in front of you is the constraint right now. That's the reason we assess everybody is before I can help you, I need to find out what right now is in your way. What is in right in front of you? What barrier? What obstacle? What limitation? What constraint is keeping you from performing like you want to? And sometimes they can't articulate it. They go, well, I don't know. I just don't throw hard enough. And so then we got to pull back the layers of the onion, and we try to find out what indeed is limiting or constraining this person's development. And so that's what we're looking for. So it starts with first the assessment before we now give somebody a program. We customize or what Marcus Elliott, who is a doctor in Santa Barbara, calls hyper-personalization. I love that. I know Marcus is a good friend of mine. And we do hyper, our whole focus is the ranch, is hyper-personalization of programs and processes for each individual pitcher to go forward.
Now, you mentioned the word, I'll go back a little bit, movement patterns, and explain to our audience, because this was really very, very interesting. Explain the deceleration phase, because you said it was one of the most important areas when it comes to this movement.
Well, there's a lot of ways you can break down throwing movements, right? There's a lot of ways. One of the simpler ways is that you have the acceleration phase and you have the deceleration phase, right? That's just a very basic, that's not very provocative. It's just you have the body building speed and then you have your body being able to stop the arm once it's reached its peak velocity. A lot of times we are not very efficient on either one, right? We're not very efficient accelerating the ball, which causes stress on certain parts of your body, specifically anterior shoulder and medial elbow. And then sometimes we're not very efficient on decelerating our arm, and that usually shows up in posterior shoulder and lateral elbow and tricep and that sort of thing. So what you're trying to do is make the deceleration, especially if it is if it's causing you pain, to be more and more efficient. It's not about, you can't think about deceleration as a yes or no answer. It's an efficiency. So you can decelerate the arm very efficiently, or you can decelerate the arm very inefficiently, and everything in between, right? So specifically, if someone has arm pain to the posterior cuff or lateral elbow, we're going to go to work at trying to decelerate more and more efficiently, specifically dissipate the force throughout our entire body. And that requires, you know, the pronation, the scapula, the trunk flexion, rotating around your front hip, all those elements that help dissipate the force and help you keep from hitting end range of motion too quickly in the movement pattern. So that, in essence, the analogy I use, and I'll have you answer this question: if I had a Maserati and I paid a lot of money on its brakes, and I said to you, now, Pete, you take care of those brakes, because if we have to replace them, it's going to cost you $100,000 to replace them. You go, oh my gosh, Ron, okay, I got it. Which would be easier on the brakes? I'm going 100 miles an hour on the freeway. Would it be easier on my brakes if I had 2 miles to come to complete stop, or half a mile to come to complete stop?
2 miles.
So what I want to do with the pitcher, I want to maximize that that deceleration pattern so that we are not coming to the end too quickly, and we're trying to dissipate that force over a longer period of time and over a longer movement. And so actually we believe that release really only is half the delivery arc, because you have all the arc leading up to it, and then you have all the arc until it becomes to dead still. And the release is only halfway. I think a lot of people, when they throw a baseball, believe that release is almost when you're almost done with the throw. No, it's not. It's halfway. Not three quarters of the way. It's more like halfway. And so so that changes the mindset of deceleration, and it will really help protect the labrum and posterior cuff. And if I can eliminate or reduce the pain, and I can have a fairly good deceleration pattern, my body is going to allow me to accelerate more explosively and more often, and therefore I'm going to have a chance at better velocity gains and less chance of injury on the arm.
And as your wife Jill told me, who obviously has been with you for many years, you guys work together, she's extremely knowledgeable. She said to me, you know, a lot of coaches teach, you know, after you throw a baseball, get in a fielding position. Well, that's a detriment to what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, it is. That means you're stopping as soon as the ball, on weight is mostly taught, excuse me, is that we stop immediately upon releasing and immediately get into a fielding position. And what we really want to do, you want to become a world-caliber decelerator first, then get yourself into a position to field the ball. I'm not saying to people, you shouldn't field the baseball. What I'm saying is, what comes first is an emphasis on decel safely and protect soft tissue. That is primary. And then we get into our fielding position or whatever. It's not a primary. My joke always is, Pete, if you're really interested in getting to a good fielding position right upon your delivery, you probably is a good thing because you're going to need it because you're going to have a lot of balls hit back to you.
Well, now, when you talk about movement patterns, if you have real good movement patterns, is that ultimately going to give you a pretty good position to defend yourself?
Yes, yes. And it goes back to Nyman's coining of the body will organize itself based on the ultimate activity. So we're very specific about the goal. We want to be maximized acceleration, and then we want to really get into a good deceleration, allowing the arm to dissipate the force, and then recover and getting into a good fielding position, or getting back and getting ready. But we never want to cut that short or cut the deceleration down just to get in a good fielding position. We want to keep rotating around that front hip so that our arm can accelerate for longer, and it allows our arm to decelerate more efficiently and dissipate the force. And that's important. So I think a lot of times you see people like a Roger Clemens completely turn and really rotate, and they're like, ooh, that's not safe because his butt's facing the third baseman.
Good question.
I think as long as you stay athletic through your whole process, you're going to be good. We just don't want you to get in this theoretical fielding position. I think that's a very bad teach.
Yeah, and coaches, you got to believe, just use some common sense. If a young 7 or 10-year-old, 12-year-old is thinking about a fielding position, on top of it, how's he going to throw any strikes? I mean, he needs to be focused on throwing strikes. So think about that, too, from another perspective. Now, look, we're getting close to the end, and this has been a great, great talk. We can't finish without a couple things. First, we still got to talk recovery. But before we do that, you know, a lot of things are misconstrued out there with some of the top experts in the field. You have a weighted ball program, but you emphasized to me that that's not the number one thing, weighted balls, to be able to increase velocity. There's a lot more factors. Explain that.
Velocity enhancement, like I said multiple times here, is multitudinous. There's a lot of different factors that go into you throwing it harder, right? I'll go over them real quickly again. One of them is reducing pain. The second, reducing abject pain. Second is building recovery so that you bounce back, that you're able to return to full functionality sooner than later. Another is movement pattern, where you become less disconnected, and a very good warm-up and a really good decel pattern that allows you to throw it. Weighted balls are one of those things that can actually enhance. Once all that is done, it can actually, it's really a very skill-specific strength program, very, very skill-specific. Here's the deal with velocity enhancement. Velocity enhancement is, I should say, weighted balls are a tool. They're not good nor bad. They're a tool. Just like if I ask you, is a hammer bad? You'd go, no. Hammer is not either bad nor good. But if it's put in the hands of a madman, a hammer may not be good. But if it's put in the hands of a carpenter, it can build beautiful things. So weighted balls simply are a tool, and you got to kind of know when to use it and what you're going to use it on. I think the number one factor of use of weighted balls is arm health and durability. That's the number one factor. It started out many years ago that weighted balls for me was a velocity enhancement program primarily. Mm-hmm. Now that's not the case. It is primarily, it's actually flipped for me. The weighted balls are primarily arm health and durability, and then it can be used in certain cases when the body is ready for velocity enhancement, because it can trick the body. It challenges the body to move faster and stay connected more dynamically. And so you got to kind of know when to use it and what you're using it for. The fear that I have is the fear of anything. It's the same in baseball. Is I have a fear of one size fits all anything, because that doesn't mean you're ready for it. That doesn't mean that is what you really need. And if you haven't done these other things, if you haven't taken care of the pain, let's say your pain's a 4 or 5 out of a 10, what good am I going to do you if I give you a weighted ball program? Eventually your pain flares. and now maybe even you gain 2 miles an hour. So what? Have I helped you? No. It's more about the process and about the person and trying to fit the personalized process to each person. Weight-a-balls can really, for some of the population, be a phenomenal fit, but not nearly as much as I think a lot of people think it is. It's certainly not 100% of the population is ready for a weight-a-ball program. And I'm not trying to scare people. It's just that sometimes you're going to put it at risk for sure, but sometimes it's just really not going to be very beneficial. And I would say that's at least 40% of the time. It's not going to be particularly beneficial because it's not the right stimulus that's needed at this specific time. And it's not going to create the adaptation that you're looking for.
All right. Now, we are coming to the end, and I want to finish with the recovery aspect, you know, kids pitching, what they should do after they pitch. You hear a lot of different things, you know, icing, running, this, that. You hear all kinds of terms. You can go on, you know, on YouTube and find stuff, but what really works, and then we're going to open it up to give you some time to kind of mention anything you'd like to help coaches around the world.
Well, the first thing is recovery is absolutely a critical part. I think after pain, we go to recovery next, because if you can't bounce back, if let's say, for example, if you do a workout and the next day you really can't move very well, you're going to have to take 2 or 3 days before you throw again. Here's what I do know. To really make any substantial gain, and I think you would totally agree with this, is that you're going to have to be capable of performing it at a high enough level that the body says, okay, it takes notice of it and you have an adaptation or growth in your body. Just like if all I did was bench press the bar and that's all I did over and over again, it's not going to be enough to create an adaptation for me to bench press, let's say, 350 pounds. I've got to do it a different way. I've got to systematically increase the stress or the load to create an adaptation. So recovery is an incredibly important thing. And what we do after, we do not ice. We don't ice. I don't know how much of your people know, but we use Mark Pro. We believe in muscle stim. We believe in getting the inflammation out with muscle stimulation and constriction rather than just icing. I think icing constricts or inhibits blood flow. I think blood flow, unless you have an injury or a tear, blood flow is very important to recovery. And so we have a whole process, probably as much as a 20, 25 to 30 minute process after we throw at the ranch that's built around recovery. And I think it's critically important for development of guys that you really understand how do you have your arm bounce back.
All right, folks, I lied. There's going to be one more question because when something pops in your head, you got to ask it. And, you know, it's my show, so I can take it as long as I want, I guess. But here's the one that, you know, the big debate out there. You hear it all the time, and I think you got a great concept on this, a great understanding talking to you. Talk about the curveball. Talk about what kids should be doing. Can it hurt your arm? Does it, you know, is it good for your arm? Should they be throwing it when they're young? All that debate that's been going on.
Tom House said not too many years ago, and he was really scolded for it in the baseball community, that curveball thrown correctly is actually less stressful to the arm than is a fastball, and he is exactly correct. The operative phrase there is correctly. Now, as you know, the curveball is created by a supinated hand position where the fingers get out inside. The natural way that the body decelerates is from a pronated position. So that is, so the curveball isn't necessarily a more dangerous throw. It's a more complex throw. Mm. And sometimes when you're inefficient, complexity can be problematic. And so double down on this is really bad teaches, like pull down the lampshade or turn the knob of the door. Those are really bad cues. Baseball is steeped in bad queuing, and that's just one of them. What I would say to people, and then you'll hear this, you shouldn't let anybody throw a curveball till they're shaving.
Yeah, right.
Which I think is rather funny because I wouldn't have had a curveball personally for me until I was 19 years old because I didn't shave. So I understand where they're coming from. They're coming from this way. The growth plates need to be sealed. You need to have, you know, have gone through puberty and all that thing. Here's what I would say to you. I have 10-year-olds at the Texas Baseball Ranch that are more than capable, are efficient enough, are good enough at their movement patterns that curveball is not an issue. I have 17-year-olds that sort of complexity, they don't need added complexity. So it is not just a matter of whether he should throw a curveball or not. It should be, is the movement pattern efficient enough that when we, and then also that you have no bad cueing, that the curveball becomes kind of a natural thing happening way out in front, what we call late launch. If that's the case, curveballs are definitely not as stressful. But if you have an earlier launch and you have that earlier unraveling, even a fastball can be very detrimental or dangerous, let alone a curveball, which is a little bit more complex. So I think my bottom line is this, because now I've probably confused people. Like, what is it? What is it? Is it right? So what are you saying, Ron? Should I use it? I would say to you that the curveball is the least of your worries. Have a really sound movement pattern. Have a late launch. Have a late unraveling. And the curveball eventually will take care of itself. And I am not against young people developing a curveball. I'm just against a lot of curveballs being thrown in a game at a young age when we're not sure if that pattern is good or not, just so we can trick them and win the game.
And when
that's
you say
what I have trouble with.
And when you say late launch, you mean a good release point?
Out in front, yes. You're releasing it out in front of your front foot. Mm-hmm. A lot of young guys are having what we call early launch, which is really more like back over the knee, where the ball, your arm is unraveling, and it's kind of hard for me to explain it without pictures. But early launches put exponential stress on anterior shoulder and medial elbow, and now we add the slider or curveball to the mix, and it could be quite detrimental. So I think we got to look more at really having better, more efficient organizations of throwing the baseball, and not worry so much about the curveball or slider. It's not as dangerous as people would say it is. I still think more people hurt themselves with a bad fastball, inefficient fastball, unraveling of a fastball than anything else.
Believe it or not, that was the last question with the podcast. But what we're going to do now is allow you to kind of mention anything you like to our coaches, players, and parents around the world, that any last-minute advice, and then we'll close off the show after that.
Well, if they would like to look up us at the ranch or anything that we do, it's called the TexasBaseballRanch.com. You can go on there. We have our elite pitcher boot camps that we hold 12 different times during the year. They're 3-day events. I would highly recommend that. We have our summer program. We do have our traveling camps. For example, we were just up in your neck of the woods not too long ago in Schaumburg. We go there twice every year to Mike Ryan's. So you can actually request a DVD on what we do. We send out. We want you to know what we do so you can make an informed decision on whether you would like to join us at the ranch. But our primary thing is really to educate and inspire and motivate young people to love the game of baseball. And as you well know, you and I were talking about this earlier this morning, so many of our young men are going away from baseball and going to other sports because it's not quite as exciting, and baseball can be kind of boring. It shouldn't be. It's not boring. Done the right way, done like you did, you were just explaining some of the warm-ups in between innings that you use. Mm-hmm. That's a lot more fun. And I would say to everybody this, that when you are an exceptional thrower, the game of baseball, it's easier, it's funner, it's more fun. And so I think hitting will come and go for all of us. If Mike Trout goes on and Mike Trout and Harper sometimes struggle hitting, then all of us will struggle hitting.
Exactly.
So, but our throwing, we can. It plays every game, and there's no reason we should struggle with that.
Absolutely. That was awesome. Hey, folks, don't forget, go to TexasBaseballRanch.com, but check out where Ron is at, whether it's around the world or whether it's in the U.S., because now you can get some visuals, too, because you're not on a podcast, you know, it's hard to get visuals. But Ron, when he gives a conference, when he gives a seminar, you're going to see a lot of visuals, a lot of demonstration, a lot of things that he teaches, and then you'll start to get a lot better understanding. And Ron, you know, again, on behalf of Baseball Outside the Box, I want to thank you for your time. It's been great. Look forward to the night when we do the coaching clinic and talk to the volunteer coaches here in Aruba. So, again, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Pete. It's a pleasure being with you here. I hope I can be back again some other time. And thank you for all that you do in the game of baseball. I followed you for a long time. This is our first time that we've been in the room together many times over the years, but we haven't had a chance to visit like we have the last couple of days. It's been really a joy getting to know you.
Thank you, Ron. I'll tell you what, folks, this was another outstanding show. Boy, was this fantastic or what? Now, I know we can, you know, we'll have Ron back as we do, you know, some of our top people in the industry. Love to bring them back and analyze more things. So, but don't forget, check us out on social media. First of all, go to TexasBaseballRanch.com, check all that out. Then go to our social media. Check us out at Baseball Out on Twitter, our Facebook page, Baseball Outside the Box. Check us out there. Do us a favor. If you're a loyal listener, thank you very much. But if you've just joined us, don't forget to join. Go to you can go to Twitter or iTunes, check, you know, join, and then you'll get updates on the show. And then you can listen to shows that we've done in the past. There's a lot of great information. Sometimes it's good listening to a show. I do it all the time. Listen to it twice because you're going to miss a lot of things that you'll pick up later on. So we are thrilled. If you need to email me, info@baseballoutsidethebox. Love getting your emails. And don't forget, remember, coaches' education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that love to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, from the beautiful island of Aruba. Have a great coaching day, and I will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.